Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Hello there, it is Wednesday the 9th of February. This is Game On and I'm Shane Dawson. It's great to have your company wherever you are tuning in from. Coming up in the next hour, we'll have Cork legend Aoife Murray on the line to chat all things camogie. Former Donegal captain Nadine Doherty will join us to preview the upcoming LGFA League campaign that throws in this weekend. Also, the League of Ireland and the Women's National League launched today, so we'll be speaking to former Shelburne stalwart Shauna Cook. And Paul Curry is live in studio to kick off our association football chat. So, Paul Curry, did we have a thing saying time for soccer on Game On? But I think we need to change it to association football. I'm really trying to plug this now and push it forward and bring it back. You know, it needs to get a bit retro here, I think, is the plan. But listen, before we talk about the League of Ireland and the Women's National League, there was a small matter of a couple of Premier League games on across the water, I should say, yesterday. So the villains of the Premier League, Newcastle United, played the Frank Lampard salt of the earth love-in of Everton. Newcastle won 3-1. West Ham defeated Watford 1-0, and we had a big discussion on Kurt Zouma yesterday, who started, which was, I think everyone can agree, frankly ridiculous. And Manchester United were frustrated by Burnley. So let's dive into Manchester United and Burnley. If you're a Manchester United fan, how worried should you be at the moment? How frustrating is it, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, extremely worrying, Shane. You know, just listening to different people around the game talking about Manchester United and talking about how they're performing very well for 30, 45, 60 minutes. But that's frankly not enough. And it's not enough particularly for a squad with as much quality inside it as Manchester United have and the individuals that they have. And Rangnick, from my point of view, hasn't done enough in order to get the most out of the players. Now, the situation doesn't help in the sense that they know he's not going to be there next year. They know he's not going to be the man who's going to be calling the shots and picking the 11 next season. So that doesn't help proceedings. But the matter of their performances, particularly at the back, like Harry Maguire, my heart nearly goes out to him with how poor his performance has been over the last couple of weeks. He got turned inside out for the goal, and his general play doesn't really give you confidence in order to give them a good foundation to build upon. And for Manchester United and for their top four aspirations, that was a bit of a dent last night, because if you do want to build a bit of momentum and confidence, you do need to be going to Turf Moor and Burnley and beating them.
Yeah, one of my favourite sayings as a fan of football is play for the shirt, and that's, I think, what every fan wants. And regardless of if your manager isn't going to be there next year and you might not be playing for him, you're still playing for a massive club and you're still playing for a packed out stadium. You know, you need to show at least some heart, some desire. Does this Manchester United team have that?
No, and I think that's the culture within the dressing room, and it has been the case for a number of years, and whatever manager's been at the helm hasn't been able to motivate the players appropriately in order to get a consistent level of performance out of them. We saw under Solskjaer, they do it for, you know, they had a really good run of probably 10 to 15 games, and then they throw the towel in and the performances just dip out of nowhere. And it's hard to, I guess, galvanise players at that level who are earning such ridiculous and vast amounts of money to push on to the next level. And if you just take a look at the two top teams within the league, Man City and Liverpool at this moment in time, Klopp and Guardiola, they are the masters of it. They have complete control, they have complete respect, and they have complete leadership. And that is lacking in abundance at Manchester United right throughout the club, at board level, at director level, and at managerial level. Is really lacking, and you could actually also say in the dressing room as well. And that culture of acceptance of just kind of mediocrity is just littered. It's almost like a cancer throughout their club, and until they get that sorted, until they get somebody in there who's going to really grab that by the horns, it's hard to see how it's going to change, because the players have shown over a consistent period of time that you can really go back to Van Gaal, Mourinho, you'd lose count of the managers that they've had, and the players have all performed for a certain period of time, and then inevitably the manager gets sacked. And until they resurrect, until they get somebody in there in the mould of a Guardiola or a Klopp, I don't see a change in Shane.
Briefly, Newcastle Everton, speaking of ludicrous big money, Newcastle 17th in the league table on 18 points, Everton one place ahead of them on 19 points. if you are a Newcastle fan and all the money that is there behind them and there's a new team that is gelling together now, obviously, for the next few weeks, or if you are being managed by the darling of English football, Frank Lampard, what position would you rather be in there? I know Everton are physically ahead of them in the table, but they're on a bit of a downward slump.
Don't talk ill of Frank Lampard in my presence, Shane, as a diehard Chelsea fan.
He'll be given an easy ride by the English media regardless of what happens, so we need some objectivity here across the water.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think from Newcastle's point of view, it looks as if the tides are changing a bit under Eddie Howe, and that's back to back wins. And even if you look at the 11 that he used last night, it's not hugely different the 11 that he inherited. He added in Trippier and Chris Wood, but the rest of the team he's worked with, and Matt Target, sorry, but he has worked with, and he started to put a bit more structure on them, and they look much more of an organised 11 than they did previously. So you can start to see what he's trying to do, starting to mould him into a certain way of playing. And then he's got obviously the signings that he made at Christmas to come into that fold, and you would imagine, given the support that they're going to get up north and how the fans get behind him, you would imagine that this little, I guess, galvanisation within the squad is probably a little kickstart that they were looking for. And you could imagine that with a couple more results, they'll start to pull away when you bring the likes of Bruno Guimarães into that squad. So a huge win from that point of view, and it also claws Everton probably back into it. And Frank Lampard, based on that performance and the performances of previous weeks, you would start to worry, probably heavily reliant on Dominic Calvert-Lewin come back into that squad. They desperately need him to come in and score goals and strike up a relationship with Richarlison. But bar the game against Brentford last week, and any time I've seen Everton, they just look like they're going to leak goals. I don't know what's happened to Michael Keane. He looks like he's in quicksand when he turns. Yerry Mina's been out for quite a while and doesn't look right. He had to come off early last night. Mason Holgate or Ben Godfrey, whichever one that goes in there, wouldn't inspire you with confidence. And when you're down the bottom, you really need to start keeping clean sheets if you're going to pick up points. So a massive job for Frank Lampard, but as a boyhood Chelsea fan and as one of my idols, I've no doubt that he'll steer the ship there.
Well, as a boyhood Chelsea fan, I was wondering why you were just trying to check your phone and not engage with me. So I can let you know, in case you're not already up to date, that Chelsea are defeating Al Hilal 1-0 in the Club World Cup semi-final. A 32nd minute goal from Romelu Lukaku has them one up. There's about 8 or 9 minutes left in that one. If Chelsea go on to win that, they'll play Monterrey of Mexico, who defeated Al Jazeera 3-1 a little bit earlier on. But let's turn our attention to the Premier League fixtures this evening. Villa play Leeds, Spurs host Southampton, Palace are away at Norwich. But I want to focus on Manchester City versus Brentford, because our reporter Peter Smith is at the Etihad. And Peter, Manchester City, their 12-match winning streak came to an end with a draw against Southampton 1-1. But on the flip side of that, Brentford have 5 defeats in a row. Is this match a foregone conclusion, or how can you tee up some entertainment this evening?
Oh, there'll be entertainment, all right. That is, I would have thought, a guarantee, because both these sides played really attractive football. The football that we're talking about at Manchester City is probably the best ever, really, that's ever been witnessed as this part of Manchester goes anyway. We've been talking earlier in the programme, I heard you talking about the United demise, and City are so far ahead at the moment. But they're up against Brentford opponents tonight. I remember when Thomas Frank took over the West London club, I watched them in a championship game early on at Nottingham Forest, and the type of football that the Danish manager was imposing on his team was absolutely brilliant. And it came as no surprise to me that they qualified for the playoffs quickly under Frank's stewardship, and then ultimately won promotion, having missed out the season before. And I think they're going to do all right in the Premier League. I know they've had this particularly poor run of late, having lost 5 on the trot in all competitions. And away form, as often is the case for Premier League newcomers, has not been the best, with just 2 points out of the last 21 gleaned. But I think they're going to be okay. And I hope they have a go tonight. I hope they carry on with their passing style, because it is good and it's very, very easy on the eye. And I honestly believe the best way as an away team at the Etihad Stadium is to have a go. Don't sit back and invite them onto you. Keep them in their half and keep them away as long as you possibly can, and, you know, try and put them under pressure. And I believe that that's what Thomas Frank will do tonight. Be bold and be attacking, and, you know, go for it. Why not?
Absolutely. Well, you've sold it well, Peter. I'm very much looking forward to that now. And speaking of attacking football and all that it has to come with, Damien Duff is the new manager of Shelburne. He was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue a little bit earlier on, as was Stephen Bradley. We'll hear from Mark Scanlon, the League of Ireland director, and indeed we'll hear from a few Women's National League voices in a few moments' time as we turn our attention to all things domestic with the League of Ireland and the Women's National League in a few moments' time.
Game on 2FM. Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Hello again. You're very welcome back to Game On. It is great to have your company wherever in the world you are tuning in from as we turn our attention to League of Ireland football and Women's National League football. I'm delighted to be live in studio with Paul Corey, former Shamrock Rovers player and UCD cult hero, I suppose it's fair to say. And speaking of cult heroes, Shauna Cook, formerly of Shelburne and a legend around those parts still. Great to have your company. Paul, if I dive right in with yourself first, this is probably the one segment I don't need any notes for. I get a bit giddy, I get a bit excited. The official launch of the League of Ireland and the Women's National League was today set in North Dublin. Football is set to return with the SSE Airtricity Premier and First Division to get underway on Friday, February 18th, and the SSE Airtricity Women's National League to commence on Saturday, March 5th. The Women's National League is set for a groundbreaking season as Sligo Rovers enter the competition to make the division a 10-team league, meaning 27 matches scheduled per team. And the Premier Division champion Shamrock Rovers will kick off the domestic season against Extra.ie FAI Cup holder St. Patrick's Athletic in the 2022 President's Cup final on Friday, February 11th, with the match live and free to view on LOI TV. Jesus, it's a mouthful as well when you have to get all those sponsors' names in. Paul, what are you most looking forward to here? I suppose so many narratives, so many talking points, so I'll leave it open-ended for you. What tickles your fancy looking at the league ahead?
I think the most exciting thing, Shane, is the return of Jack Byrne. I really do. In my time in the league and watching the league before I played in it, and then in the years that I was involved playing wise, I've not seen somebody to the level of Jack in League of Ireland football. I think what he did in his initial stint with Shamrock Rovers was incredible in regards to his impact to winning the league and also winning the FAI Cup. And I think that the stage of his career now, you're probably likely to see Jack play the best football of his career, and I think we're very, very lucky to have him involved in our domestic league and involved in such a prominent team in Shamrock Rovers. And I think with all the good players around him, I think you're going to see somebody who's going to shine this season. I think he's going to score a plentiful of goals. He'll be involved with the majority of the good play in the final third that Shamrock Rovers will have, and they will certainly base the team around him, not only in domestic league, but also to see what he can do in Europe. And I think you're going to see somebody who oozes quality just grace our league. And I guess the other narrative away from that is, let's see what the Chasing Pack have with regards to chasing Shamrock Rovers, because it's blatantly obvious that they have an abundance of talent and by far the best squad within the league.
Yeah, and will be interesting to see who exactly the Chasing Pack are as well. Shauna Cook, if I bring you into the conversation, and if we're sticking with the League of Ireland side of things, what excites you most? Because I know you're heavily involved in the Women's National League game, but you keep an eye on the men's domestic affairs as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, the saga between St. Pat's and Dundalk, with, you know, the situation with the manager change and whatnot, I think, and from players moving, will be really interesting to see how that kind of pans out. I think Pat's fans will be eager to try and stay ahead of Dundalk this year, and there'll definitely be pressure to beat them. I think obviously with Shells getting promoted as well, I'll obviously have a keen interest there. I think all eyes will be on Duffer. There's been a lot of movement in and out, so you know, I think that'll be interesting to kind of see what happens on and off the pitch. There's been some concern about kind of, I suppose, a lack of striker or where the goals are going to come from. I know Dan Carr kind of signed last week, but I think the jury's still out in terms of he's kind of had a history of moving clubs, so I'm not quite sold on Dan yet. And I think you know, in terms of with Duffer coming in, what we've seen with kind of past teams that have gotten promoted is they've kind of made a catch for the old guard of other clubs or experienced players that maybe have had their time in the UK and they've signed them a little bit older, a little bit more experienced. But what I've kind of been excited about Duffer coming in is he's actually like gone for players that are probably younger and a bit hungrier, you know, to get that kind of League of Ireland experience, and that's really exciting. I've watched a few of the pre-season games, so my hopes are up for a change with Chelsea.
Yeah, it will be interesting to say what the men's team need is a Noel Murray, a big striker up top to sort things out. But listen, 51552 is the text number if you do want to get involved in the conversation as to what you are most looking forward to in the League of Ireland and indeed the Women's National League. But as I did mention earlier, the league launched today. Antonio Donoghue, our RTÉ soccer correspondent, was at the launch and he spoke to Mark Scanlon, the League of Ireland director.
First of all, it's a great day and great to be here for the launch of the new season. Last year, obviously, we weren't afforded this opportunity with COVID and we had a very uncertain season ahead of us. So for this year, we're going in with a lot of positivity, great buzz around the place and lots of talk, lots of predictions going on. So we're looking forward to a really positive season. We're delighted that we have the opportunity to have crowds back in full attendance for the start of the season. Really, really positive season ticket sales, which have been a big boost to the league as well. On the pitch, very competitive across all three divisions. There's lots of new signings, lots of transfers and changes. So I think we have a really positive year ahead.
You were mentioning season ticket sales and a lot of clubs have recorded a record number this year already.
In the back end of last season, one of the most important things for me when we were around the grounds was seeing how many young children were at the games. This year that's transferred on to the season ticket sales. So, you know, that's what we hope. We hope to see a young audience at the games this year and people getting into the National League maybe for the first time. And I think there's a lot more interest in and around the leagues this year, so it's great.
One of the aspects of the strategic plan, though, was to improve the facilities around the league. That's not going to be a quick fix.
I think what strategic plan has laid out is that we will start that process now. We need to work with our stakeholders for that to happen, with the clubs, with government, both local and central. So I think that process will begin, and I think over the coming years we will see big improvements to our grounds across the country. And when that happens, I'm sure the fans will flock in numbers, as we've seen anywhere there has been ground improvements over the last number of years. And lots of clubs have positive plans to do that off their own back as well. So.
Yeah, we certainly need more facilities, not less, and let's not get rid of any League of Ireland grounds. But Paul, just continuing the conversation on who will be challenging Shamrock Rovers. So Derry City have obviously had a bit of money put in behind them. They've made some big, big signings. St. Pat's Cup champions finished second. Tim Clancy in there. Owen Doyle has come on board and been given quite a long contract, to be fair, given his age. But they'll certainly be thereabouts. Will Dundalk be up there? Are they back or are they still in that, I hate the word transition, but are they still in that period?
Yeah, they probably are. I think naturally enough my eyes are drawn towards Derry, and I think Rory Higgins did a really good job in his first season in there last year, and you could start to see maybe the sort of shape that he wants to put on his squad. He was a very, very good player. I'm not sure if many people remember him, but playing against him, he's extremely talented, and you can kind of see that the way he played the game, which was very open and very expansive, is the way that he wants his Derry City team to play. In order to do that, you need quite good attacking players, and it's undeniable that they've added a lot of quality to their squad. You only have to look at Patrick McElhenney and Michael Duffy, two of the most exciting players over the last number of years, to go in and back to their hometown. And if you can get the crowd behind you up in Derry, it's a very difficult place to go. I always found that anyway, that the atmosphere, the fans really get behind their players, and it just seems, I know they've levelled it out with an AstroTurf, but sometimes it seems like you're playing up against a big hill and a big breeze, and I always found it hard to get out of your own half. So naturally enough, I think with the additions there, it likes a Dumigan has gone in as well, who was pretty solid in at Dundalk. I think they're probably the ones that I would suspect would latch on to Shamrock Rovers, or at least be the ones who'd be closest to them. And you're right in saying Dundalk are maybe the next in line behind that. Stephen O'Donnell had a really quick turnaround at St. Pat's, and he managed to get them going very, very quickly into his tenure at Richmond Park, and he'd be hoping for some of the same. He's obviously going to know a lot of the players, a lot of the key ones. He's brought Robbie Benson and John Mountney back with them, so they'll be key to the dressing room and how they play and setting standards. So if they can add some younger players, a bit of magic on top of that, well, who's to say? But when you compare the squads Dundalk and Derry to Shamrock Rovers, for me anyway, looking at it on paper, there's just no comparison.
Okay, well, let's hear from Shamrock Rovers boss Stephen Bradley. He was speaking a bit earlier.
That has to be our aim. Obviously, we did okay last year, but we want to try and improve on that this year. And obviously, that includes winning the league.
Now, the news today that the stadium ban, if you want to call it that, has been overturned by a judicial review. Your response to that?
Delighted. Credit goes to the club because they've gone and appealed, obviously, and won the case, which is fantastic. I'm delighted for the fans who have waited so long to see live football again. And thankfully, we can have a big crowd against UCD now. I just felt that the ban was a bit severe.
Now, as you look to the season ahead, apart from Shamrock Rovers, who are going to be contenders, who are going to be challengers?
Well, I think Pats will obviously be there. They already have invested heavily. They'll expect to win or challenge for the league. So, and you'll always get a couple more that'll be there. It's going to be a really competitive group and it's going to be a difficult season.
I wanted to play that audio, Paul, after your answer so you couldn't just copy Stephen Bradley's answer and regurgitate the same teams. Sean, Stephen Bradley mentioned it there. The stadium ban has been overturned. Obviously, Shamrock Rovers have been landed a fine as a result of the fireworks down in the RSC last season. But is it the right decision, in your opinion, Shauna, to open the gates back up? I mean, I suppose the argument is it was very harsh to punish the whole club for the action of a couple of idiots in an away ground that wasn't even out in Tala. And for the whole spectacle as well, that Shamrock Rovers have sold, I think, 3,100 season tickets. Tala's going to be rocking this year. For the league as a whole, is it right to have fans on opening night back in Tala?
Yeah, I think so. As you said there, like it's tough to punish a whole club for the actions of a few idiots. And like in terms of where the league is now, like that interest was generated over the past few seasons. We need everything, you know, we can do and everything that can be done to kind of encourage people to go. And the more kind of, I suppose, these situations happen where the stadiums are closed, like people are just going to turn to other sports because there is a real hunger now to go to live games. You know, I noticed that last year people messaging me asking for tickets for games to get into to grounds. So yeah, I do think it was a good decision, and you know, I really do hope that you know, there's not a repeat of what happened last year because it was really dangerous and it was obviously not great for the league either.
Thought that was a play on words there, repeat.
Oh, repeat it. I like it. Shauna mentioned, I suppose, one of the things that she is looking forward to most is Damien Duff. And he wasn't actually doing any media earlier, but somehow Tony O'Donoghue managed to sneak a short conversation with him. So a big thank you to Gavin White, Shelburne's media man, and indeed to Damien Duff for chatting to Tony a little bit earlier on.
I think the game should be played a certain way as well. So I want to play a good brand of football and hopefully dominate games, which is probably unheard of for a first division team coming up. But that's one of, I guess, many goals for myself, the staff and the players. It's a massive, massive club and it's yo-yoed for too long, 10 plus years. So, of course, it's just to stabilise and stay in the Premier Division. The lads are fit. There's not many injuries. There's always a couple of niggles, obviously, especially with the way we train. But we've built, I guess, a brand new squad overnight. 15 out, 15 in, more or less. You could call it risky, but it's what I thought the club needed. And, yeah, listen, it's gone really well, but we only really find out, I guess, next Friday and beyond.
Well, I'm not for one second questioning Shauna's professionalism, but given her Shelburne ties, Paul, if I come to you for a staunchly objective opinion on how Damien Duff and Shelburne will get on, I think it's all well and good saying you want to play a sexy brand of football, but when you're trying to dig in for a 1-0 win in Ballybuffet in the wind and rain and you're trying to stay up, I know he's implemented a new professional outlook and kind of internally it seems to be going well in training in the mornings, so it's quite the change for the club as a whole, and he's brought in quite a lot of young players, and Dan Carr, as Shauna mentioned earlier, and losing Yo-Yo Matty to Finn Harps, Michael O'Connor's gone up north as well. So how do you think it will transpire? And also, I suppose the second leg to that question is Shell's Pats opening night live on RTE as well, some way to kick things off in Talca Park.
It is, and I think having Duffer in the league full stop is a huge statement, and it's a huge honour for a number of people. Duffer, listen, I worked with him at Shamrock Rovers for the year that I was there. I may not have been training a lot, but I was able to witness a number of his sessions, and the one thing that stuck out to me is just the standards that he demands from the playing squad. You know, his sessions by nature are super. You can see that he's worked with some of the top managers across the board. But, you know, it's one thing putting on a session. It's another thing demanding the maximum from the players. And I think that's what you'll see from Shells this season. You know, he is talking about an attractive style of play. But that doesn't mean that he's going to be rolling the ball out from the goalkeeper and playing through the back four into the midfield and up to the front man. If the most effective pass is up to the front man, I can bet your bottom dollar they'll do that, and they'll play effective football. And when they haven't got it, they're going to be working bloody hard and they'll be pressing from the front. That's an absolute minimum when you're working with Damien Duff. They by no means have the best squad, by no means have the best players. It's certainly going to be a project that they're going to have to work on, but what he will do is he will get absolutely every last bit of quality out of those players, and you can assure that they'll be well set up, they'll be well drilled, they'll have a clear identity of how they're going to play. And that, a lot of the time, Shane, in football, is enough to win you a number of games of football. Do I think they'll be up around the upper echelons of the league? No. Will they go down? I'd be very, very surprised. But it is certainly an exciting one, and one that we can follow as the league goes, you know, meanders throughout the season. The game against Pats will be an interesting one because Pats have had a number of changes, Shells have had a number of changes. First game of the season, it's hard to know which way it will go, but you can bet your bottom dollar they will be out of the traps fast on week one.
Absolutely, they will indeed. Speaking of teams that perhaps might be down in a relegation battle, Drogheda are rebuilding with Kevin Doherty there, and I want to talk about Sligo Rovers though, Paul, because they are doing absolute wonders off the field. They've released their master plan and they're looking to put money into that, and they're really well operated. They're engaging with the community. They're doing everything right in terms of what you'd look at as a club. I know Bows as well, we get on to them, are, you know, really good in terms of marketing and kind of getting in and around the community, and they've made Dalymount Park their own and they've really associated with that identity. But Sligo first, before we chat Bows, should you, if you're a Sligo fan, would you be concerned that all the positivity off the field may not necessarily translate on the field, considering the squad that they've assembled and considering the players they've lost? And I say that with in mind, obviously, Kenny going over to Celtic.
I think Johnny Kenny leaving is a major dent in what it is they were trying to do and hopefully trying to progress into this season. Because when you take a striker, you know, Shauna mentioned it about Shells and looking for a front man, they're hard to come by. And even if you look at Shamrock Rovers, you know, people have been saying, but they need a 20 goal a season man, and they've not found that in a number nine. And Sligo had that in Johnny Kenny. Naturally enough, the league is a springboard for the younger players to go to the next level. He has gone, John Mahan has gone, and they're two big, big characters for them to try and replace. The foundations, the likes of your Buckleys, your Bulgers, they're still there. They will certainly give you a lot. And when Greg Bulger was in the team last season, they certainly performed. But are they at the levels, and will they be at the levels over the next 12, 24 months that they're at when they had Paul Cook? It's unlikely. They just haven't got that array of talent. They don't seem to be able to attract the best players in the league to the showgrounds, and that's proven difficult for them. What they have got though is, and they've proven that over the last number of years, is they've got a good academy, and they're certainly able to bring that younger generation too. And yes, we talk about the Jack Burns and the Shamrock Rovers and success within the league, but you also have to be realistic, and our league is a springboard for the younger players to come through, and Sligo have been very, very successful in doing that, and that's certainly something that we can look to. But they're not competing like they did when I was playing. I can understand for the locals who are used to seeing success how they might be frustrated, but they have a good manager in Liam Buckley. They're a very well run club, and certainly for the standards set in the league, they are probably one of the most, I guess, smooth run outfits that we have in the league.
Yeah, certainly for any listeners out west, get down to the showgrounds. It is one of the best stadiums in the league for atmosphere and indeed for away fans if you're planning an overnighter. It's a great night out in Sligo as well. Shauna Cook, we moved the conversation on to Bohemians. They have obviously lost a lot of players, a lot of leaders in key areas, centre half, centre mids, the top goal scorer. We had Rob Cornwall on a few weeks ago and we were talking about, I suppose, those guys departing the club and the effect it will have on the pitch. And Keith Long has a bit of a rebuild on his hands, and he's done so well over the years as well, unearthing these talents. He's a bit of a magician alongside Trevor Crawley. So my question, I suppose, Sean, is you've played in big teams with big leaders and big characters. How detrimental do you feel the departure of those guys from the Bohemian Football Club dressing room will be, just in terms of the general spirit and the day-to-day training?
It's huge. Like, you know, a manager and coaches can only do so much. But when you're on the pitch, it's 11v11. Like, you need those big characters to guide the two games. You know, you need the players, you know, the likes of the key Buckleys to organise and manage and, like, back people up. So, you know, that's really going to affect them. I also think, like, the likes of Keith Ward is overlooked. Like, you know, I wouldn't say he's the biggest impact of a player in terms of performance at times, but, like, you can see that he's a really positive character to have around the club, and he was, like, adored by the fans and the players and the staff there. And to have people like him in the dressing room, it's really important. Like, it's often something that's kind of undervalued, is those kind of people that, you know, are real club people and are in the dressing room when the chips are down, are kind of getting people, you know, the spirit back up and you know, just kind of have that kind of fighting mentality. So I do think it's really going to affect them. Like, they haven't really recruited, I think, defensively over the off season. Like, I think last year, like, they really changed their back line a number of times over the season, and they were conceding goals, especially set pieces, I think, because of that. So I was really surprised there wasn't more effort put into kind of, I suppose, the defensive artillery. Like, there's a crazy amount of midfielders and attackers, and I think whoever comes in to kind of replace Georgie Kelly has, like, big boots to fill. I mean, you know, I think Promise has shown a lot of promise in what we've seen so far, but like, it's just kind of dealing with that expectation to perform week in, week out, and dig the team out when times are tough. So, I do think it'll be a bit of a difficult season for them based on what they have so far.
Okay, well, moving on to the Women's National League, or the SSC Airtricity Women's National League, should I say. It's great to have SSC Airtricity on board for both the men's and the women's game. Shauna, I suppose the same question, but a different club. Shelburne have lost Kira Grant to Rangers. Saoirse Noonan's gone over to Durham. They've lost some big characters, and yes, they still have the likes of Pearl Slattery, club captain, and Noel Murray that we mentioned, and they've got kind of good solidity there. But would that be a concern with the players they've lost and the players they've brought in, that there's a bit of an unequal balance there, because they're going to be challenging in two fronts? Obviously, they'll look to retain the league title, but they also have the small matter of a bit of European football to look forward to as well.
Yeah, like, it's really difficult, you know, especially for the likes of Shells and P-Mount that are constantly losing players every year. It's just, like, I've been there. It's so difficult for managers as well to try and plan. Like, you can't put a real season-long strategy in place. I'm delighted for Kira because she's the ultimate pro and she really deserved it. Like, she was training with Damien Duff's team last year and just putting all that effort in. So I think she's going to be a massive loss to the team out of all the ones that have left. They've managed to keep the core, like Pearl, Rachel Graham, Noel, Chloe Mustaki and Jessie, who also signed. There was a player playing last year, Abby Larkin, who stepped up from the underage, and I don't think she got enough time. I think she deserved more time. And, like, what I've seen so far of Abby, I think she's going to fill a kind of a void. Even last year, I do think they struggled for goals throughout the season. So I think that Abby, when she's played, has really shown she has an ability to score goals. But you're completely right. Like, it can be difficult to try to balance Champions League focus and league, because it kind of comes halfway during the season. It's not like the men's game where you've kind of got games spread out. You literally have a week of games. And I think the format was slightly altered last year. I'm not sure if it's the same this year. But, you know, it can just be really difficult to balance the two. So for me, the priority has to be league, because it's got to be long-term focus, and the Champions League is great, but, you know, you have to ensure that you're performing in the league so you're there next year and the year after.
Yeah, absolutely. Noel King will have a tough job in his hand. And I think we also have to mention Shelburne's new away jersey with the names of all season ticket holders on it was launched this week, which is a thank you to their fans during the COVID times when fans weren't able to get to the ground. So it's a really nice idea from Shelburne Football Club, and it's great to see nice tidy jersey as well released from Umbro. And there's a couple of nice jerseys in the league across the board, to be fair. Paul, Shauna mentioned it there, with kind of young girls coming through in Shelburne, Abby Larkin and Jessie Stapleton as well. But the league as a whole, we've seen Treaty, we've seen Ellen Malloy with Wexford as well. I mean, I've seen some clips from Ellen. I haven't seen her live now, but I've interviewed her a couple of times. A really experienced head on young shoulders, and it's great to see these young players given the chance. You mentioned it in the men's side of things, but it is so prevalent in the women's game. That can only be beneficial for national teams, for Vera Pauw and development in that regard, because they are getting their chance here. And yes, a couple of players have gone across the water, as Shauna mentioned there as well, but to see the young talent in our league on our doorstep, readily available, I mean, that's magnificent.
Yeah, it is. And I think the women's game as a whole lies a massive opportunity for the FAI. You look at Vera Pauw's side and the progress that they've made over the last number of years. There seems to be a list of sponsors wanting to get involved in the game, and that can only be beneficial. And there's an opportunity here for the FAI to learn from the mistakes of the League of Ireland and the men's side of things, and I guess the lack of facilities that have been there for the players, the lack of coaching that have been there for the young underage structures. There's an opportunity to rectify that at the beginning with the women's team, and like you mentioned, if we can help nurture that talent, those younger players, give them a domestic league that is worth staying in the country for, well then you stand to big up and build a really attractive product that people want to go out and watch and people want to get behind. And you can see with the international games when they're out in Tala, the crowds that they're getting out there are fantastic. And if you can replicate that on a domestic level, well, there's no reason why the women's game can't continue to grow and why we can't keep the best players and the likes of maybe the future Katie McCabe's in the country. And that for me is a massive opportunity that we can't waste. You know, we have to ensure that we take advantage of this and we have to ensure that we get it right this time around.
Yeah, we've seen recruitment. Athlone have brought in a few players from America. Bows have really strengthened their team. Katie Burtis and Kira Mara joining. DLR Waves are going to be thereabouts with John Sullivan managing them. Treaty and Wexford, we've seen Wexford. Kylie Murphy as well, player of the year last season, has stayed on again and will be such a big leader. Shauna, might we have the most competitive Women's National League on our hands that we've had in quite some years?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's been an interesting movement of players around clubs, and there's been interesting players, I suppose, come into the league that nobody really knows yet. Like Galway showed as well that they were quite strong ending the league. So I do think it'll be a lot closer this year, and I'm really excited to see tighter games. Like there's nothing more I hate than 5-0 wins or 6-0 wins. I don't think they do anything for the league, and they're great to be a part of if you're the winner, but like in terms of development of football, like they're not going to attract long term fan bases. You know, people like competitive games, they want to go and see battles. So I'm really hoping that this season we'll see a lot more of those kind of 1-0, 2-1, and just based on the movement of players and how kind of I think there's been a leveling out of, you know, decent players across clubs now, we might see more of those closer games this season.
Yeah, well, speaking of battles, if anyone is in the vicinity of Piemont's ground or Shelburne's ground when Piemont and Shelburne go head to head, that is up there with one of the fiercest rivalries I've been to there in terms of derbies. Last season it was really good to see. I mentioned Sligo as well, participating in the Women's National League this year, which is fantastic to see. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up our association football chat, but before we do, Paul Corry, I'm going to hang you out to dry here and put you on the spot. It'd be remiss of me not to mention the first division. Athlone, Bray, Cove, Cork, Galway, Longford, Treaty, Waterford, Wexford. Who is going to get promoted?
It can be a bit of a lottery in the first division. We all know how competitive it can be between those sides. But for me, probably Morris going into Waterford. I know, obviously, did quite well with Chels last year in getting them up and has done that previously and obviously knows the division quite well. And you would imagine, given the fact that they've held on to a number of the players that they had last year, I thought they had enough. I thought they'd picked up a bit of momentum that would steer them clear of relegation. They've obviously been sucked back down, but I think they should have enough, and particularly in Morris's experience, to just guide them through that division. But the games tend to be so tight and there's very little between those squads. You look at John Caulfield and Galway United, another one where they've been building for the last 2 years. They'll fancy themselves to go up. So I mean, if you're asking me to pick out one,
that's exactly what I'm asking.
Well, I actually kind of come round to Galway, but I'll stick with Waterford.
Okay, Mauro Ball down at the RSC. And in a word, Paul, who's winning the league?
Shamrock Rovers.
Predictable, I suppose, the demon of the last time. Shauna Cook, in two words, who is winning the League of Ireland and who is winning the Women's National League?
the League of Ireland, it has to be Shamrock Rovers, and the League of Ireland, I'd be hung out to dry if I didn't say Shelbourne.
Well, you might be hung out the driver saying Shamrock Rovers in the first place, but however. As I said at the start, the League of Ireland kicks off on February 18th. We have Shelbourne versus St Pat's Live on RTE in a packed Talca Park, which is great to see. And the Women's National League commences on Saturday, March 5th. Paul Corry, Shauna Cook, thank you both very much. Coming up after the break, we'll have Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray as we turn our attention to the LGFA leagues that start this weekend. And we'll be reviewing a bit of Camogie.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Hello there, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention now to LGFA political dealings as well. We'll get to that in a few moments' time with Nadine Doherty, former Donegal captain, and Aoife Murray, Cork Camogie legend. I still think we're being doing a disservice. They need to create a new word, bigger than legend, I think. But Aoife, we'll start with Camogie, that threw in, I suppose is the right verb to use, last weekend. Galway Offaly was off, but there was a couple of matches in Division 1 and they were fairly handy wins for Tip and Kilkenny. What did you make of the opening weekend's action?
Yeah, look, I think firstly it was great to get it kicked off. And look, unfortunately it was only two games, which is a little bit disappointing, I suppose, for the first round of the league. But look, easy win for Tipperary in the end, winning 3-16 to 3 points. So look, probably from a down perspective, you would be disappointed walking away from that game. A slight concern. I know they seem to be missing one or two players, but you know, to start off your year, which for me, I thought they had a real positive 2021, and I was really looking forward to maybe where they'd go, but not the greatest of starts. First round of the league is always, it's always tough to kind of blow off the cobwebs. But yeah, not a great start for down. But you know, I think Tip after the semi-final disappointment last year, it was a positive way to get the league underway.
Will Tip have a bit more extra motivation considering how last year went? And they'll really, I suppose, the question we will get to is the balance in terms of what you want from the league and what you want from Championship. And you can have asked that question, I suppose, in any code across the board. But for Tip in particular now, they'll have a bit of fire in the belly.
Yeah, look, it's actually a hard one to look at because, you know, for me, it was their opportunity. They'd been looking and knocking on that door for so many years, really finishing kind of fourth for a number of years. Interesting to hear Bill say that, you know, he's really looking at that ruthless side. You know, and for me to really have to kind of push on. And I think what I would be looking for from them this league is seeing them kind of get up to that top tier level with regard to fitness, not just physical fitness, but mental strength of making the right decision at the right time, or at least the best possible decision. Because I think for me, that certainly let them down the semi-final, where they had the opportunities, you know, kind of right there in front of them, and unfortunately, just decision making just didn't go their way. And to me, that is down to all those forms of fitness. So I would like to see them kind of take up a step or two on that side of things from the league. And it's good to see that a few new players out. The scoring was spread around. And look, for me, it was great to see Crofty Van back playing another year, as worried she mightn't come back. So I think that's great for Camogie. But certainly, I think the league is extremely important for them.
Yeah, definitely echo those sentiments. It's great to see her back for Tipperary Camogie, and indeed for the game as a whole. 8-point win for Kilkenny. Can we read much into that?
Look, for first day out, I don't think you can. But look, a win is a win. It's always great to set it out that way. However, look, a little bit closer than the Tip and Down game. I think, you know, Limerick will be happy enough as well, putting 110 on the board. A few good scores for them. And look, from Kilkenny's perspective, a lot of the tried and tested names getting on the scoreboard. I suppose for Brian Dowling, it's can they maybe unearth one or two more that will push them over the line this year. Obviously, I think you can see from years previous, they've always been extremely competitive in the league, always being there at the last day. So they seem to go quite well early in the year, but I'd imagine that, look, they're going to use this to test players to try and make sure that they're on the right side of the last day of the year for Camogie.
I suppose that is that perennial question of what do teams want to get out of the league, and I suppose it's probably different for your Tips, your Kilkennys, your Galways compared to Down, Offaly, and looking at Division 2, the balance of you want that momentum going into Championship, but at the same time you need to unearth a couple of players. So what's more important in your eyes? Is it just getting the team right, the panel correct, getting a couple of younger players perhaps blooded, ready to go for Championship, or do you need actual wins on the board, points on the board, to have that momentum come Championship?
I think there's two ways of looking at it, because I think from a team's perspective, you know, each team will be maybe a different stage of their process. You know, I can only speak from my own perspective in Cork. You know, if we won the league, super, it's always great to win, right? If you go out every day to win. But for us, it was always, what did we learn? Did we unearth anybody? Or actually, did we find out that we need to work on X, Y, and Z? And they were the main things that we always took out of it. However, for teams like Down, Tip, Offaly, Wexford, all those teams, like for the league, for them, it's really about trying to get as many wins under your game to get that little bit of momentum, the confidence, so that when you do take it into the Championship, you know, you've got that kind of winning feeling and understand that you can do it.
Yeah, well, speaking about how it will pan out, I suppose, we'll be interested to see how something else pans out. I want to bring Nadine into the conversation as well. And that thing that we are interested to see how it pans out is the GPA calling for immediate integration of the Camogie Association and the LGFA. The GPA have submitted a motion for consideration at GA Congress on the 26th of February, urging the GA to take proactive, meaningful and swift action to expedite integration with the LGFA and the Camogie Association. The players' body said that it is inter-county players' firmly held belief that for equality to be achieved within the Gaelic Games, family integration of the three national governing bodies must be made a priority. The GPA, which combined with its female equivalent, the WPGPA, in December 2020, believed that the merger would have a major positive impact on wider Irish society, with 97% of all inter-county players backing integration between the three national governing bodies. Nadine, this is a no-brainer, surely.
That's what you think, Shane. There's just been talk about this for a long time. I wrote a piece for the Sunday Independent back in November, and I researched a huge amount what has happened to date. And to be honest, what came through for me was, if something's going to change, it's going to be through the player voice, and that's what we have here. You know, 2005, there was an integration task force sent up. 2017, we had a one club model, which I've heard people aren't happy with that now. We've had past presidents calling for this, massive media hype. And what's key to Tom Parsman's statement, I felt, is they're looking for a roadmap. Because we can have all these strategic plans and we'll do this and we'll do that, but a roadmap is what's necessary. I think it'll pass. I think it'll pass overwhelmingly, because I think the majority of the GAA are in favour. There are people who aren't, but I think they're silent, and I think they'll stay silent. And I think, interestingly, and Aoife might come in on this, you know, since November, the GAA have overseen Camogie's commercial rights, and that's the next 3 years. So that's a very clear statement that we're very much willing to work together. So Aoife, you know, what do you think in terms of Camogie getting on board here with the roadmap?
I can see them putting up barriers, to be honest, Nadine, because you just said it there. You've mentioned 2005, you've mentioned 2017. We're now February 2022 and we're still talking about it. It's taken the players to take a lead and take a stand on that. We're bringing a motion, as you just said, to Congress to further ring fence where we want to go. And I'd go back even further, like WGPM GPA came together in December 2020. Like, that didn't just happen overnight. There was a lot of ground covered before that. It's been an amazing success ever since. You know, listen, I'm on the board, I'm on the exec, and it's been amazing the past 14 months, the diverse thought, listening to different experiences. And I think for me, it's been nothing but positive. So the question I would ask is, why? What about the past, Nadine, right? We can't go back over it. But why can't we do it now?
So where's
the transparency? Like, you know, they've constantly been muting this. There's MOUs. oh, listen, why don't we have a joint account, or why don't we do this? Why can't we just do it and understand what's the roadmap? What are the milestones that we have to achieve in the next 12 months so that when we sit down next year for another motion, we don't have to be having this conversation?
Yeah, it's the roadmap that's key. And I think if the motion is passed, it's going to put pressure on those responsible for the delay. I think names will be named and people will have to stand up and take responsibility and come out publicly and say exactly why it's been held up. But look, there's a strategic plan due in a few weeks and I expect it to appear as one big happy family. But this motion could throw a complete spanner in the works, I suppose, in that regard. So we'll have to see.
Isn't it amazing how, I suppose, look, we fought for, I suppose, equitable funding, Nadine, from the government. We secure that. We managed as a GPA to give those grants out to over 4,000 members before Christmas. And this is the players' body doing all this. Right, and I think once again the players are showing the way for future generations. I think it's time now that we actually just let the players enjoy the game so that they don't have to take on these responsibilities for the future players, for the kids right now who are looking up to this. But certainly on the roadmap, we need to have tangible tasks that we can all examine and get examined at the end of the year. Have we hit these milestones? If not, why? Where are the barriers and who are the barriers as well in this? Like, you can say it's good that the GAA have now taken over the commercial side of Camogie. I don't necessarily see that as a positive, because if we have three NGBs, why can't that NGB actually stand up on its own 2 feet? It's obviously, there's an issue, so why can't we just get the three of them all together in one room and understand how the hell we get there?
Yeah, certainly, and it is a conversation that I feel will rumble on for weeks and months, and hopefully it does get passed, and this is a big step in the right direction. As I say, it's about time, to be absolutely frank about it. Unfortunately, we're just running out of time. Nadine, I do just want to mention the Ladies Gaelic Football Association and its official retail partner and National League sponsors, Lidl Ireland, are delighted to announce a 4-year contract extension that will mark a decade of serious support, representing an investment of €10 million by the retailer. The extension will take partnership through to the conclusion of the 2025 season. With all that said and done, because that conversation was so good there about, and a really good conversation, and something, a conversation that has to be had, we've eaten into our time about our league preview, but very, very briefly, what are you looking forward to this weekend? A couple of big matches. A very generic answer I'll offer you.
Well, obviously, as a Donegal woman, I'd have to start the season off with the Donegal-Galway match on TG Cahir on Saturday. Galway are managerless at the minute. Donegal, I think, are going quite well, so I'd hope for a Donegal win there. And then obviously, big standout game, All-Ireland champions Meath playing against Cork. We'll see what shape Meath come back in. You know, they weren't the favourites last year, so how will they carry that tag? Shane Renine in with Cork, he is going to be geared up for a huge year. So I'm going to tip Cork on that one.
Absolutely. Okay, Nadine, Aoife, thank you both very much. Nadine, we'll bring you back in next week, I'm sure, to go through those fixtures that all throws in this weekend. So much to look forward to there. Two bumper previews we've had this evening, and coming up next is another bumper show. It's Tara Kumar straight after the news.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. 2.